I was married from home, and I'll die in marriage.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our history, among other topics, broadcast with your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. Before we get on with tonight's show, I need to read our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on the Defenders 7 radio show and Facebook page are those of the callers and or authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Defenders 7. Now, if you haven't done so already, come check us out on our national Facebook page by typing in the all capital letters in the search box, Defenders 7. Before you hit that like button, just know, or that join button, just know that we expect all of our members and future members to participate through everything we do throughout our group. We also have a website. If you type in all lowercase letters, www.defenders.com. On our website, you will find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any money that we bring in from donations go back to our communities in a time of need. We're not like the other groups where they keep 90% and they only distribute 10%. All 100% goes back. So by all means, please purchase something from our store or click that donate button. Every penny helps. Help us to help you and our communities in time of need. We also have a YouTube channel. Hop over there and hit that subscribe button. A lot of good videos, survival videos and such. We're on MeWe. If you click on organizations and scroll down to Defenders, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now for all of our shows that we do live here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in. Or if you don't feel like talking, just log into our chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio, live. And that number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Again, number to call to participate, area code 914-205-5773. And I'd like to turn the microphone over and welcome your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. Good evening, Kimberly.
Hello. Hello. Man,
hello.
I am, like, irritated to no end. I swear
I'm
to God, You know, with a nursing shortage, as bad as it is, you would think the FBI and the state of Tennessee would get off their lazy ass and do their damn job. I turned all my shit in August 4th, and I still don't have my nursing license renewed yet. Still, I have emailed them almost, I'd say, well, the person who's directly responsible, you have to email. I've emailed her 5 times. I've emailed the state 3 or 4 times. Nothing. I haven't even got so much as a, sorry for the line, you know, the delay. We're working on it. Not a damn thing. Man, I'm telling you what, the state of Tennessee can kiss my ass. I am just so irritated with them right now. I think I'm going to start writing them every other day until they get so irritated with me sending emails. I'll send them every damn day. And I told them, I said, look, I don't care how irritated. I said, look, I know this is irritating, but you're pissing me off by not even answering me. So, and then I'm going to start calling them too. I could get FBI background check for a gun in 15 minutes.
Yep.
But you can't even get a damn back. Well, I don't know. It says they got my information, and I haven't received an email to say that it was turned down. So when it's concerning your background check, they only email you if your cards are no good. So,
right.
And I had my license. Yes, I had a license in 5 other states. But they've expired, and I'm not, you know, all they have to do is go on to nurse system and say, oh, yep, okay, no suspensions, no revocations, no complaints made. Okay, fine, boom, done. That's how fast it takes, is for you to go on their website, which I'm sure they have it, and type in someone's name and their license number, because they've already got them, and that's it.
Right.
But hey. Whatever.
Yep, I gotta go. So, I gotta go fight with disability tomorrow.
Oh, about what?
I get to go enjoy my day in Social Security.
Oh, they cut Social Security, or they just being an asshole?
No, they're doing that. What do they call it? Review.
Oh, okay.
That's
so stupid. Make sure you're an asshole.
Yeah, pretty much, because this will be my first one, and I've been on disability for years.
Yeah, but, no, I know, but you know what, at least they're doing their job, because there are people who don't need to be on it that are on it, and I can name, a handful of people that are fraudulently lying to the government to get Social Security who don't deserve it because, one, they never worked a day in their life. There's not a damn thing wrong with them except for the fact that they're lazy and never worked a day in their life and expect the government to take care of them. And they live in government housing. Go figure.
Yep.
I know quite a few people on SSI right now who don't deserve it. Maybe I should drop a dime on them. I have no loyalty when it comes to thievery. When it comes to thievery and child abuse, I have no loyalty. So I'm sorry. That could be a disqualifying factor for some people, but I don't give a shit. You know, I can't even get SSDI because I did work. I've worked for the past 30 years of my life. And can't get jack shit for help because I'm not legally blind.
You're legally
crazy. I am
crazy.
If I take my glasses off. Yeah, I know. Oh, but that don't mean shit.
And your ten personalities would qualify.
Yeah, well, you know what? I might start playing my 10 personalities up then and go and apply for SSDI.
Well,
I might just start doing that.
You got all them personalities to go through.
Shit. I've only had one nursing license and one name. But no, seriously, I mean, it's just irritating. And then they get all these fuckers that come in the country
and they get help before us. My mom gets a whole whopping $200 in food stamps for her and my brother for a month. Oh, actually, no, she doesn't even get $200. It's like $173. But yet these fuckers with 11 kids get almost $1,000, and they're too damn lazy to go to work. I don't know. Sorry, my rant is done. I'm just irritated. it's like, whatever. I'm tired. That's all. But I got in my new cast iron skillet that I could use to hit someone in the head with it if they try to break in the house again.
There you go.
It's a 15-inch skillet. I'm going to tell you something. That son of a bitch is heavy.
Yep.
I ordered them from Walmart, and I thought it was going to be a fortune. Nope. $15 for one skillet, for one cast iron. And then, I mean, this fucker is heavy. And I got a set of three, so I'm going to have an 8, 10, 12, 8, 10, 12, and a 15. I got all the different sizes. I'm like, screw it, because I hate not having, and I threw all my other frying pans away. I love cast iron.
I got some of them at the flea market and half price because it was their last day and they didn't want to take them.
Oh, cast iron is awesome. Oh, when I cook, I use it. I haven't got the set yet, but I got the big one yesterday. And I seasoned it, you know, the whole nine yards and all that cool shit. But I cooked chicken today with potatoes. But it's so big, you can put – I cooked the chicken on one side of the pan and let it where it was almost completely done. And then I put – I chopped up potatoes and put them on the other side. And that's how I cook. That's how big this pan is. So I was like, oh, this is awesome. But you do get a daily dose of iron supplement from cast iron. At least I won't be anemic anymore. But
yeah.
Pat told me, he's like, so what is it that I can't do to the frying pan that I'm going to do it? I said, let me tell you something, son. I know where you sleep. You will not do anything to my frying pan. Oh, my God. But someone said that because today's dish soaps are not made with lye, that you can wash and scrub a cast iron skillet with soap and it'd be okay. I'm like, yeah, if you want to season it every fucking time you use it. I mean, that's the whole point of a cast iron skillet. You know what I'm saying? You could use – I just use water. And a scrub brush, and you could also use salt. You take salt and you just pour it in there and you scrub it around and boom, it's clean. Now, don't get me wrong, if it's really nasty and you can't get it clean, then yes, use your soap and water, and then you have to season it all over again. But that's the whole beauty of it, of having cast iron skillet. You know, Jackass stole my last one. But he shall be named nameless. He just moved back to West Virginia. And his girlfriend or his wife, whatever, doesn't even know how to fucking clean it. And she took it. Pepper. Okay, so I'm done. I know I'm done, but whatever. I know I do my little rants and whatever. Oh, did you guys hear Colin Powell passed away?
Yeah.
He died of COVID, and he was fully vaccinated. So did he die from the vaccine, or did he die from COVID?
I'm betting he died from the vaccine, but they don't want to say that.
They're never going to say it. They're
oh,
never going to
no.
say it out loud. No. No, they'll never
Not
say
until
that.
You get a whistle. Not until you get a whistleblower.
They already have.
I mean, another one on the kids.
It's not going to die. Everybody knows if you're a whistleblower, you die.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, but, I mean, that's just the way it is. Trying to think. Did you see that? Oh, you probably didn't. Governor Inslee, what state is he a governor from?
Who?
Governor Inslee. Lee Inslee. What worthless state? Is it Washington State? Is it on the West Coast, or is it can't think of what state he's. Well, anyway, one of the sheriffs or the deputies or whatever, no, it was the police chief or somebody, can't remember who it was, told he was dirty because he would not get the vaccine, and they fired him. So it can't be a sheriff because you can't fire a sheriff because they're elected. So it had to be the chief of police or whoever, high ranking in the police department. But yeah, but they fired him because they called him dirty. And he made a video and he said it was his last time on dispatch. And he said, and Governor Inslee can kiss his ass. Telling you, and somebody made a comment that they're doing it so they have all yes men. No, that's not why they're firing people and they're getting rid of. They want to weaken us to the point where China can invade. And some jackass said that Trump's the one who divided the country. Okay, I'll give them, yes, Trump did divide the country in one sense. The left hates him so bad. That's where the division comes from. You know what I'm saying? That the people that really did vote for Biden voted for him because they hated Trump so much, so they got to preach it into the media to make you hate Trump because of his mean tweets. So, yes, that divided the country because he did not run as a Democrat. He ran as a Republican. What they're really doing, they're weakening the country so China and Russia or whatever both can invade. But what they fail to realize is that the military that does end up having to leave and all the police departments and fire departments, I don't think they realize that they're going to be on our side, not their side. They're not going to have the numbers that they think they're going to have. But anywho, I thought we'd go ahead and go back to empires again, and I'm trying to figure out where the hell I was at last time. I forgot. Well, shit. It's been a couple weeks. Did we go through Crimea? We did Congo, right? Or no?
What's that?
Did we go through Congo?
I don't think so.
I thought. Well, see, here's the thing. We did the Commonwealth of England, the United Kingdom. Oh no, we didn't do the Comanche Empire. Okay, then the United States. So I skipped a bunch of other ones because I couldn't pronounce anything, and I'm not going to butcher shit. So yeah, I'm going to skip over a bunch of these. But anyway, the site that I looked up was list of empires on Wikipedia, and it has country or the empire name, the country, the capital they had, when it started, when it ended, how long, the starting emperor and all that cool stuff or whoever. And it's like a list, and then you could click on each there, and then that's when it goes through the whole list of everything about the empire and what they did and stuff like that. But it would honestly take us 10 years if we actually did every single one. So the Comanche Empire was in the United States. There was no capital. And it started in 1750 and ended in 1850, so about 100 years. And it's a region of the southwest United States and northern Mexico, which was dominated by highly mobile Comanche warrior units known as Brecheria. Let me see if they have any other. Let's see. Before the Comanche expanded out of present-day Wyoming in the early 18th century, the lands that became known as Comancheria were home to a multiple of tribes, which is notably the Apaches. Much of the region had previously been known as Apacheria. And Pekka Hämäläinen argues that from the 1750s to 1850s, the Comanches were the dominant group in the Southwest, and the domain they ruled was known as the Comancheria. Pekka calls it an empire, which means that they expanded and then confronted with Spanish, Mexican, and American outposts on their periphery in New Mexico, Texas, and Louisiana and Mexico, they worked to increase their own safety, prosperity, and power. So according to Pekka, disease was the single most dangerous threat to Native Americans, which, honestly, disease is the most dangerous thing to any tribe around the world that doesn't have outside influences of the modern day world now. I mean, if you think about it, the indigenous Indian tribes in India and Africa and all of those, I mean, I'd say they're beyond below third world country, but there are tribes that have never seen, or as they say, the white man or any other culture besides their own, because that's how hidden in the jungles and whatever the terrain they have is. And so, yes, if they can go like we did, even in modern society today, that we had, think about it, how there was little to no diseases back in the day, except for things like leprosy and a few others. We didn't have all of this cancer and things like that. And I honestly think that all of our diseases that we have now are all brought on by man. And so I think that's the reason why.
They keep putting in our freaking food.
That's true, too. Because if you look at it, think about it this way. Europe, they're not allowed to have the shit that they have in their food like we do here. And this is the reason why it works. You know they've got free health care over there in the UK, right? It works. They only have, 20 million people at the most? Maybe 30 million people in all of the UK? Okay, great. But the reason why it works is because people are healthier. They don't have the preservatives and all the crap in their products that we do.
Trisodium phosphate.
Well, oh no, it's not just that. I mean, look at their sodas. Four ingredients. We got like 15, 20, 30
yeah.
of them. We have MSG. We have all the dyes. Well, dyes are in everything anyway, but all the preservatives and shit. And so they live longer, they're healthier, because they don't have all that crap in there. Well, not to mention, you don't have to drive everywhere, so you walk everywhere. They do have, don't get me wrong, they do have trains, and they have the subways, above ground, below ground, whatever. But you know what I'm saying? They're not like America. They don't have the donuts and pastries like they do have them, but they're not like, again, they're not like ours. So needless to say, a country like America could not do free health care, which is why population shit, that's why we have such a piss poor diets and stuff. So bringing diseases from our country to other countries, or even them coming here, I mean, that's the problem with a lot of these smaller tribes. So the Comanche manage to avoid disease if you keep to yourself and you can avoid it, which gave them the upper hand over the Apaches and other tribes in this area. Along with this, the Comanche were able to exchange goods with the Europeans. The main thing they exchanged that gave them power was horses. Horses gave the Comanches more military power and allowed them to hunt more buffalo. The Comanches used this military power to obtain more supplies and labor from the Americans, Mexicans, and Indians through thievery, tribute, and kidnappings. See, by that, the American Indians were not exactly innocent of what they did, simply because of how they got shit done. So, yes, I know it sucks that what happened with them, with the all the Indians, but, you know, they weren't exactly, you know, I don't want to say the Pope, because the Pope is about as guilty as they come. But you know what I mean. Although powered by violence, the Comanche Empire is primarily an economic construction rooted in an extensive commercial network that facilitated long-distance trade. Dealing with subordinate Indians, the Comanche spread their language and culture across the region. So, like I said, they're not as innocent as people think. Okay. Okay, we did the Commonwealth of England. So the Congo Free State, or the independent state of the Congo, was a large state in Central Africa from 1885 to 1908, and was privately owned by and in a personal union with Leopold II of Belgium, of which he was the constitutional monarch. Huh. I know he went out. Oh, come on. Let me open it up here. Leopold was able to seize the region by convincing other European states that the Berlin Conference on Africa, that he was involved in humanitarian and philanthropic work and would not tax trade via the International Association of the Congo. So he was able to lay claim to most of the Congo Basin. And on May 29th, 1885, after the closure of the Berlin Conference, the king announced that he had planned to name his possessions the Congo Free State, population, which was not yet used at the Berlin Conference. So the Congo Free State operated as a separate nation from Belgium in a personal union with its king, privately controlled by Leopold II, although he never personally visited the state. Well, so the capital was Boma, and the common languages are French, Dutch, and more than 200 indigenous languages. And the religion for that area is Catholicism. And they were an absolute monarchy from, oh, that was their government. And so there were, there's, from 1885 to 1908 was Leopold II of Belgium. And then their governor general was F.W. de Winton. Let me see. And their currency was the Congo Free State franc, or franc, whatever you want to pronounce it. So, in 1876, Leopold II of Belgium hosted a geographic conference in Brussels, inviting famous philanthropists and other members of geographic societies to stir up interest in a humanitarian endeavor for Europeans to take in Central Africa to improve and civilize the lives of the indigenous people. At the conference, Leopold organized the International African Association with the cooperation of the European and American explorers and the support of other several European governments, and was himself elected chairman. Leopold used the association to promote plans to seize independent Central Africa under his philanthropic guise. That just sounds great. Henry Morton Stanley was famous for making contact with British missionary David Livingstone in Africa in 1871, later explored the region during the journey that ended in 1877, and was described as Stanley's Through the Dark Continent. That was his book. Failing to enlist British interest in establishing the Congo region, Stanley took up service with Leopold II, who hired him to help gain a foothold in the region and annex the region for himself. So from August of 1879 to June of 1884, Stanley was in the Congo Basin, where he built a road from the lower Congo up to Stanley Pool and launched steamers on the upper river while exploring the Congo for Leopold. So Stanley set up treaties with the local chiefs and native leaders. In essence, the documents gave overall right to the respective pieces of land to King Leopold II, Stanley's help. Leopold was able to claim a great area along the Congo River, and military posts were established. Yeah, so I guess we just need to go and claim our own land, huh? Okay.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I never even set foot in the frigging country. Just, that's mine. Okay, I want it. Okay, the Crimean, taint it? Okay, that's the empire. It was in Crimea, and I am not going to pronounce the capital because that's just, it starts with a, Bakhtisaria. It's a Bakhtisari. In 1441 to 1783, in about 342 years, one of the last Turkic kingdoms annexed by Russia. Hacettepe was the first one, and Şahincare was the last emperor of Crimea. Well, damn it, I went a little too far. Well, shit. I hate that. I'm telling you, I hate this freaking touch screen. Okay, there it is.
Potty mouth.
Well, who's that?
Hi, Lorna.
Hi, John.
Long time no see, slacker.
What's up?
Not a damn thing. We're doing empires again.
Nice.
So I find, until I find something else to do, I don't care. You know, so it is what it is. Yeah, we started with A's, and we're just working our way down, and apparently there's been more than one empire per country. So some of them are repeated. Some of them we skip because I butcher the names, and I'd just rather not do it. So if I skip your call, your empire, I'm sorry. So... hold on. So the Danish colonial empire was Denmark, or Denmark-Norway, from 1536 to 1814. Their capital city was Copenhagen, and it was, their empire is about 417 years. And Christian III of Denmark was the first leader, and Frederick IX of Denmark was the last. Let's see, find just a few little tidbits. Danish overseas colonies and Dano-Norwegian colonies were the colonies that Denmark and Denmark-Norway possessed from 1536 until about 1953. At its apex, the colony spanned four continents, and Europe, North America, Africa, and Asia. The period of colonial expansion marked a rise in the status and power of the Danes and Norwegians in the Kalmar Union. The Danes and Norwegians during this time increasingly saw themselves as citizens of the same state fatherland, the realm of the Oldenburg monarch. In the 17th century, following territorial losses on the Scandinavian peninsula, Denmark, Norway began to develop colonies, forts, and trading posts in West Africa, the Caribbean, and the Indian subcontinent. Christian IV had first initiated the policy of expanding Denmark-Norway's overseas trade as part of the mercantilist wave that was sweeping across Europe. Denmark-Norway's first colony was established at Trankubar on India's southern coast in 1620. Admiral Ove Jade, G-J-E-D-D-E, led the expedition that established the colony. After 1814, when Norway was seceded to Sweden following the Napoleon Wars, Denmark retained what remained of Norway's great medieval colonial holdings. Today, the only remaining vestiges are two originally Norwegian colonies that are currently within the Danish realm of Faroe Islands and Greenland. The Faroes were Danish county until 1948, while Greenland's colonial state status ceased in 1953. They are now autonomous territories within the Kingdom of Denmark with home rule and a relationship referred to as the unity of realm. Have you guys noticed that, I don't know if you're too familiar with the area over there between like Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, all of those. It's a lot of islands with a couple big pieces of land. And have you watched any of their movies? Just don't watch it dubbed. Just read the subtitles because dubbed movies just irritate me. But there's a movie called The Wave, and it took place in, I believe it was Norway. Yeah. And all of their little islands, they're all connected by bridges, of course, and they actually had a tsunami because part of the mountain fell off into the water, and it caused a massive tsunami, and they had two. And it destroyed everything.
Oh, when did that happen?
Hold on a second. Let me get you the. I've watched this movie like I don't know five times, but like I said, don't watch it dubbed because it sounds so bad.
Because that's where my family is from, and I wish I knew what I did with that one picture, where the actual family is lived. But back in the day, for the kids to get to school, they had to hop a boat from island to island. And I believe it was the 80s, they finally put bridges up so they didn't have to take boats anymore.
Okay, I think I found it. It's the coolest thing. I can't pronounce shit, like I said. Hold on a second. I'm trying to find if I could get all of these pictures. Damn it. Hold on a second. And of course, there's more than one movie called The Wave. You got to make sure you get the right one. Okay, here it is. It's Norwegian. It's a 2015 Norwegian disaster film directed by, I'm not pronouncing the dude's name. let's see. It depicts there's a crevice. It collapsed. And hold on. Let me see if I can get the area and the time when it did it. Let's see. It was a 260-foot tsunami that destroyed everything in its path. And I'm trying to find out because it happened two times before, like I said. It was in the 1900s, and I believe 19—oh, here it is. So basically it's based on a rock slide tsunami incident that destroyed the village of Tafford. Or I don't know how they pronounce it, but it's T-A-F-J-O-R-D. On April 7th, 1934, and it killed 40 people. And then it happened again. Actually, it was in 1905 and then 1934. My bad. They got this backwards. But anyway, what happened was it destroyed everything. So the same town got leveled in 1905 and 1934. And, I mean, it's beautiful, but they have bridges. And like you said, and they have to have ferries and things to get way out to the end. And, but, yeah, it's a pretty cool documentary. But that's just the way all of those lands are over there, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I know it was a side part of had probably had absolutely nothing to do with it, but oh, well. So Delhi Sultanate, which is India and Pakistan, also Delhi was the capital, was from 1206 to 1527, about 321 years. And, Al-Din Abak, I cannot pronounce his name. That's the first leader. And Ibrahim Lodi was the last one. And so the Delhi Sultanate was an Islamic empire based in Delhi that stretched over large parts of the Indian subcontinent for about 320 years. Five dynasties ruled over the Delhi Sultanate subsequently. The Mamluk dynasty, the Qaji dynasty, the Tughlaq dynasty, and the Sayyid dynasty, and the Lodi dynasty. And it covered large swaths of territory in modern-day India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, as well as some parts of Nepal. I've always wanted to go to Nepal, but I guess I can't now. I'm not going to fly anywhere. I'm not going to, you know, take the jab and wear a mask. As a successor to the Ghurid dynasty, the Delhi Sultanate was originally one among a number of principalities ruled by the Turkic slave generals of Muhammad Ghori, including Yildiz, Abek, and Kubacha, that inherited and divided the Ghurid territories amongst themselves. And I'm going to cut it on that one because it goes into all their names. And this one begat, and the Mongols and Buddha. I mean, it's just all kinds of information in there. There is one cool thing about, I don't know if it was Nepal or what's the other? What's the other regions over there, some other countries besides Nepal? I wanted to go on this, going through these, through the different countries for the different temples and stuff. And they welcome, even though they're Buddhist or whatever religion they are, at this one particular temple, they welcome all religions to go there, and it's pretty cool. But I'm not going to get to go, unfortunately. Okay. The Durrani Empire was in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and Kandahar and Kabul were the capitals. From 1747 to 1823, for about 76 years. And Ahmad Shah Durrani was the first emperor, and Shuja Durrani was the last ruler. Let's see. Okay. Let me look for something. So in 1709, Mirwan Hotak, chief of the Gehiji tribe of Kandahar province, gained independence from the Safavid Persians. From 1722 to 1725, his son Mahmud Hotak briefly ruled large parts of Iran and declared himself as Shah of Persia. However, the Hotak dynasty came to a complete end in 1738 after being toppled and banished by the Afsharids, who were led by Nader Shah Afshar of Persia. The year 1747 marks the definitive appearance of an Afghan political entity independent of both the Persian and Mughal empires. In July of that year, Loya Jirga was called into session, and that's their grand council. It lasted for 9 days, and two chief contestants emerged. Haji Jamal Khan of the Muhammadzai lineage and Ahmad Khan of the Sandozai. So Muhammad Sabir Khan, a noted Darwish, he was a holy man, who had earlier predicted that Ahmad Khan would be the leader of the Afghans, rose to the Grand Council. And he said, "Why all this verbose talk? God has created Ahmad Khan, a much greater man than any of you. His life is the most noble of all the Afghan families maintained. Therefore, God's work, for his wrath will weigh heavily upon you if you destroy it." And that's what he had said. So Ahmad Khan reputedly hesitated to accept an open decision of the Grand Council. So Sabir Khan again intervened, and he placed some wheat or barley sheaves in Ahmad Khan's turban and crowned him Pearl of the Age, or the Shah, the Pearl of the Age. It's a lot easier to read the parentheses than it is the word. It's direct translation, I guess. Sorry. The Grand Council concluded near the city of Kandahar with Ahmad Shah Durrani being selected as the new leader of the Afghans. Thus, the Durrani dynasty was founded. Despite being younger than the other contenders, Ahmad Shah had several overriding factors in his favor. He belonged to the respectable family of political background, especially since his father had served as governor of Herat, who died in battle defending the Afghans. So it's the same thing, a saint like of all the monarchies and all of the other families. It's everywhere. Except the United States. We're the only ones that pretty much elects everybody. And you know what I'm saying? So you don't, well, I say that, but all the establishment, he stays forever. But you know what I mean? We don't have, like, from one father to son to father, you know what I'm saying, direct, and just keep going down and down and down. There's someone always different that pretends to be in power. Okay. The Dutch Empire, or the Netherlands, and Amsterdam is their capital, from 1568 to 1975 for about 407 years. Let's see what they've done. Okay. So the Dutch colonial, I thought I just read this, or did I, or they have more than one? Okay, the Dutch colonial empire comprised of the overseas territories and trading posts controlled by, administered by Dutch chartered companies, mainly the Dutch West Indies India Company and the Dutch East India Company, and subsequently the Dutch Republic, and by the modern Kingdom of the Netherlands after 1815. It was initially a trade-based system which derived most of its influence from merchant enterprises and from Dutch control of international maritime shipping routes through strategically placed outposts rather than from expansive territorial ventures. The Dutch were among the earliest empire builders of Europe, following Spain and Portugal. So, yeah, they're the ones, they're the main ones, Spain, the Indians, the Dutch, you know, all of them, the main ones that went around and discovered everything and put the little flag on it and said, okay, it's ours. So with a few notable exceptions, the majority of the Dutch colonial empire's overseas holdings consisted of forge factories and port settlements with varying degrees of incorporation of their hinterlands and surrounding regions. Dutch charter companies often dictated that their possessions be kept as confined as possible in order to avoid unnecessary expense. And while some, such as the Dutch Cape Colony and the Dutch East Indies, expanded anyway. And it shows, and on the site it has a map of the territories that they went to and such and all that cool. So they have a bunch of former Dutch colonial possessions, and it's just the Dutch East Indies with company rule, Dutch India, Dutch Gold Coast, New Netherlands, Dutch Guiana, Formosa, the Virgin Islands, Bengal, Brazil, Mauritius, Malacca, Dutch Cape Colony. I mean, they just got quite a few over time for certain areas that they were in control. As a result of the rise of the Dutch economic, as a result of the problems caused by their intercompany rivalry, the Dutch East India Company was founded in 1602, and the charter was awarded to the company by the state generals, granted it sole rights for the initial period of 21 years. So to Dutch trade and navigation east of the Cape of Good Hope and the west of the Straits of Magellan. So that was their area that they went. So the directors of the company, the Heren 17, were given the legal authority to establish fortresses and strongholds, to sign treaties, and to enlist both an army and a navy to wage a defensive war. The company itself was founded as a joint stock company, similar to its English rival that had been founded 2 years earlier. The English East India Company was the name that was their rival. So in 1621, the Dutch West India Company was set up and given a 25-year monopoly to those parts of the world not controlled by its East India counterpart. And in the Atlantic, the Americas, and the west coast of Africa. So the Dutch also established a trading post, which is modern-day Thailand, during the reign of King Narasan in 1604. And they had their own issues, their own conflicts and stuff. sorry, my brain is just going like 90 miles an hour. I can't keep up with what I'm looking and what I'm reading. Hey, that's tired.
Oh, excuse me.
The Egyptian Empire. The New Kingdom, also referred to as the Egyptian Empire, is a period in ancient Egyptian history between the 16th century B.C. and the 11th century B.C., covering the 18th, 19th, and 20th dynasties of Egypt. Radiocarbon dating places the exact beginning of the New Kingdom between 1570 and B.C. and 1544 B.C. The New Kingdom followed the Second Intermediate Period and was succeeded by the Third Intermediate Period. And it was Egypt's most prosperous time and marked the peak of its power. The concept of a new kingdom has one of three golden ages, and it was coined in 1845 by German Egyptologist Baron von Bunsen, and its definition would evolve significantly through the 19th and 20th centuries. The later part of this period under the 19th and 20th dynasties of 1292 and 1069 B.C. is also known as the Ramesside period. It's named after the 11 pharaohs. Ramses. Yeah. After Ramses I, the founder of the 19th dynasty. Possibly as a result of the foreign rule of the Hyksos during the second intermediate period, the New Kingdom saw Egypt attempt to create a buffer between the Levant and the Egypt proper. And during this time, Egypt had attained its greatest territorial extent. Let's see. So the 19th dynasty was founded by Ramses I, whom the last ruler of the 18th dynasty, Pharaoh Horemheb, if I pronounce that correctly, had chosen as his successor. His brief reign marked a transition period between the reign of Horemheb and his powerful pharaohs of this dynasty, in particular his son Seti I and grandson Ramses II, who would bring Egypt to new heights of imperial power, kind of like in The Mummy and all of those cool names. I guess this is who they were talking about, Ramses I, the rich pharaoh, and Imhotep and all of them. So Seti I fought a series of wars in Western Asia, Libya, and Nubia in the first decade of his reign. The main source of knowledge for Seti's military activities are his battle scenes on the north exterior wall of Karnak. Karnak, Hypostyle Hall, along with several royal stelas with inscriptions mentioning battles in Canaan and Nubia. The greatest achievement of Seti I's foreign policy was the capture of the Syrian town of Kadesh and neighboring territory of Amaru from the Hittite Empire. Egypt had not held Kadesh since the time of Akhenaten. Oh, King Tut. I'm not going to even pronounce his real name, because I can't, had failed to recapture the city from the Hittites. Seti I was successful in defeating the Hittite army that tried to defend the town. However, the Hittites managed to take it again after Seti's departure. How do you guys pronounce King Tut, his real name?
King Slut.
You guys know? No.
King.
King Tut. That's
King
what they
Slut.
Called him. Funny. Smart ass. Okay. It's like TUTANKHAMUN. I know they call him King Tut, but maybe it's because they couldn't pronounce his whole name, and I have no idea how to pronounce that. So, is it Tutankhamun? Or, yeah, whatever. Sorry. So Ramses II, or they called him the Great, sought to recover territories in the Levant that had been held by the 18th dynasty. So his campaigns of reconquest culminated in the Battle of Kadesh, where he had led Egyptian armies against those of the Hittite king Mutawali II. Ramses was caught in history's first recorded military ambush. Although he was able to rally his troops and turn the tide of the battle, to the arrival of mercenaries. That's all I'm not even going to go there. But yeah, that's just so basically all of the mummy movies. Yeah, those are true, except for the mummies coming back to life. But you know what I mean. All the information. So they did their homework. Let's see, can I see? The Elamite Empire, which was Iran. Oh, crap. Ooh, crap. I wish I could stop yawning. Sure. It's Iran in southern Iraq, which is pre-Iranic. The dates were 3200 to 539 BC. Proto-Elamite was the first one. And, yeah, I can't pronounce the dude's name. Sorry. I'm not going to. There's no test on this, so.
Thank God.
I know, because this shit's going right through my head, too. I'm just going to, you know, if I could just throw some, I'm just skimming through this stuff, just picking out some cool random shit, you know, kind of whatever. I'm trying to look, but some of this stuff is like, oh, my God. So Proto-Elamite, civilization grew up east of the Tigris and Euphrates alluvial plains, and it was a combination of the lowlands and the immediate highland areas to the north and at least three proto-Elamite states merged to form Elam. Anshan, which is the modern Fars province, Awan, which is the modern Lorestan province, and the Shamaski, which is modern Kerman province. So they changed their names like usual. So references to Awan are generally older than those of the Anshan, and some scholars suggest that both states encompass the same territory in different eras. See, if you notice the Middle East, if you look at it, what the Middle East is today, also if you go back even to biblical times, they changed the names. And something that I learned while doing some of my Bible studies, some of the people in some of the regions, they still go by names of biblical times instead of modern day. They don't want to be referred to by the modern, like Iraq. That area has been changed names, the different names. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I'm going to get myself confused. Like Syria and all those areas, you cannot refer to them as modern day, like Syrians. Just say, for example, whatever they were in biblical times, what a lot of them want to be known as. They don't want, and so unlike America, who's been here for, you know, only the short period of time as an established country, they just renamed everything over and over again. Just stick with one name, you know? But anyway, it goes through the three different dynasties and the different trade they did with other civilizations, which is pretty cool. And I'm going to skip the rest of this region because it's just too confusing. So my apologies. Not really. I just, you know, I have no attention tonight, no attention span whatsoever. So the Exarchate of Africa was a division of the Byzantine Empire centered around Carthage, Tunisia, that encompassed its possessions on the Western Mediterranean, ruled by a viceroy, and it was established by the Emperor Maurice in the late 580s and survived until the Muslim conquest. And it's going to make me open it up. To the Muslim conquest of the Maghreb in the late 7th century, and it was along with the Exarchate of Ravenna, one of the two Exarchates established following the Western conquest under Emperor Justinian I to administer the territories more effectively. And it was from 591 to 647. So, like everybody else, it had a bunch of wars. So the late Roman administrative system, as established by Diocletian, that's just a cool name. I'm going to name my dog Diocletian if I ever get another one. Provided for a clear distinction between civil and military offices, primarily to lessen the possibility of rebellion by the overpowerful provincial governors. Under Justinian I, the process was partially reversed for provinces that were judged to be especially vulnerable or internal disorder, capitalizing upon this precedent and taking it one step further. The Emperor Maurice, sometime between 585 and 590, created the office of Exarch, which combines the supreme civil authority and of a Praetorian prefect and the military authority of a Magister Militum, and enjoyed considerable autonomy from Constantinople. The two of them were established, one in Italy, with its seat at Ravenna, and one in Africa, based in Carthage and including all imperial possessions in the Western Mediterranean. The first African exarch was the Patricius Danadius, and there was the Arab Muslim conquest. And wow, they had a bunch of exarches of Africa. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 of them. Not a whole lot to the exarch of Africa. Ethiopia is going to be a bitch. We're going to skip Ethiopia. The Fatimid Caliphate was an Ismaili Shia caliphate of the 10th to the 12th centuries, spanning a large area of North Africa. So it ranged from the Red Sea to the east to the Atlantic Ocean in the west. The Fatimids, a dynasty of Arab origin, traced their ancestry to Muhammad's daughter, Fatima, and her husband, Ali B. Abi Talib, dude, the first Shiite imam. So they were first acknowledged as the rightful imams by different Ismaili communities, but also in many other Muslim lands, including Persia and ancient or adjacent regions. Originating during the Abbasid Caliphate, the Fatimids conquered Tunisia and established the city of Almadia. And I'm not reading it in Arabic either. The Shiite dynasty ruled territories across the Mediterranean. If you guys notice, there's more than one type of Muslims. There's the Shiites, the Sunnis. And what's the other one? I know there's three, but it doesn't have him. And they all have different belief systems. And you can't, I could never personally tell them apart. But they fight because everybody believes in something different. Let's see. It does have, but it only has two of them in here. And I'm not going to butcher anymore. Sorry. I'm just having one giant brain fart tonight. Sorry, guys. The first French Empire officially the French Republic until 1809, then the French Empire was the empire ruled by Napoleon Bonaparte, who established the French hegemony over much of the continental Europe at the beginning of the 19th century. It lasted from May 18th, 1804 to April 11th, 1814. And again, briefly from March 20th, 1815 to July 7th of 1815. Although France had already established a colonial empire overseas since the 17th century, the French state had remained a kingdom under the Bourbons and a republic after the French Revolution. Historians refer to Napoleon's regime as the first empire to distinguish it from the Restorationist, the Second Empire. Well, no shit. Which is ruled by Napoleon's nephew, Napoleon III. Okay, how can Napoleon's nephew be Napoleon III? If Napoleon was Napoleon, I thought that only went father to son. Or do they just call him Napoleon as a name for their leader, like Russia has a czar? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Or that we're just saying they got to make everything difficult.
That's a good question, though.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I get how, like, a lot of the rulers, like in Russia, they made them change their names, the women. A lot. I'm trying to think of young Catherine or Catherine the Great. Her name wasn't always Catherine. Her name was Sophia. And so she had to change her name to what? If you watch the movie Young Catherine, it goes to the whole Russian Empire and all that stuff because Peter was crazy. And until she had him killed. But anyway, they all changed their names. And they were a czar. But how could Napoleon Bonaparte be Napoleon the First and his nephew be Napoleon the Third? If it was his nephew. Unless it was some of that ancestral family shit going on. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? It's, normally it goes father to son, down the line. And
yeah.
How could... Forget it. It's got to be... Hold on a second. I confused myself. I know I do this. Yeah, see? It says Napoleon III was the first president of France from 1848 to 1852 and emperor of the French from 1852 to 1870
a nephew of Napoleon I. He was the last monarch to reign over France. And he was elected to the presidency of the Second Republic in 1848. But still does not explain how he's Napoleon III, unless they just used Napoleon as a...
Well, it could be... it depends. You said he was the nephew of Napoleon I, okay? Maybe they were named for the grandfather. In other words, like you have John Doe, and then he has a son, would be John Doe Jr., okay? And he has a son, David Doe, and David Doe has a son and named him John Doe after his father. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but how would it be his nephew? Because his nephew, it means
no.
The
listen
sister.
To what I just said. No. Listen to what I said. So you have John one. Okay, so John the original has a son.
Yeah.
Who becomes a junior. So the next one. So if John Jr. were to have a son, it would be John the second, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't John that had the son who named him John the second. It was his brother, David, that had the son and named him John, and he's the second because of the grandfather. That might be how it happened. Or, as you said, I mean, they could be using Napoleon as a title, but I don't see it. I'd want
that's
yeah,
what I'm
you probably
up.
Yeah, you probably want to see how that works.
Hold on a second.
But
yeah,
I can see where it would work.
Hold on. That's what I'm looking at because I'm confused. Let's see. Napoleon, but okay, well, okay, here you go. See, this is, I found it. Hold on. See, he was Napoleon Bonaparte, right? The first. His son, he had a son, which was the second Napoleon. And then... I'm trying to look it up, but it's not showing me. I want the whole link. And it talked about his sister. Okay. I'm trying to find out if they just use it as a, you know what I'm saying? You know what his son's name is? Less Invalid. Invalides. Son, you're not valid. So we're going to call you Less Invalid. That's what his name looks like. Oh, my God. He married Josephine and had Napoleon II. No, it does not say. How the hell his nephew is Napoleon III? It doesn't say. I'm sorry. I'm sidetracked. Hold on. Oh, okay. I found, hopefully this comes in. Oh. See, the thing about Napoleon III, his nephew, he grew up in exile. But that still doesn't explain shit. It doesn't. It just says that. Okay, it says Napoleon III was the nephew of Napoleon I, grew up in exile. The year 1815 marked the end of Napoleon I's reign. However, Napoleon III was determined to regain the French throne. He began, never mind.
I can answer my own damn question. Kind of like George Foreman. Every one of his kids was named George or Georgina. And there's like, what, 9 of them? So I think I know what you were saying. The father was named Napoleon Bonaparte, so he was the first. And then Napoleon named his son Napoleon, whatever, to be this. Napoleon's not his real name. Because his son's name was Les Invalides, whatever, Aldis. Napoleon Bonaparte II. So I think Napoleon was just something they named for the emperor or something like that. Because his sister, a boy, and that's why he was Napoleon III. That's what it is. It has nothing to do with his damn name. Charles Louis Napoleon Bonaparte, that's what it is. Not a damn thing to do with anything. Okay, confusion over with, because I'm ending it. My brain hurt. I'm sorry. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go after the show, and I'm going to sit down and figure it out how the hell that Napoleon III got his name and how he was the nephew of. Okay, so anyway, a series of wars known collectively as the Napoleonic Wars extended French influence of much Western Europe into Poland. At its height in 1812, the French Empire had 130 departments. Wow. Like what they call it. And I got 130 departments. And ruled over 44 million subjects. Maintained an extensive military presence in Germany, Italy, Spain, and Poland. And counted Austria and Prussia as normal allies or nominal allies. Early French victories exported many ideological features of the revolution throughout Europe, and the introduction of the Napoleonic Code throughout the continent increased legal equity, established by jury systems and legalized divorce. Yes, I'm going to read that. Were abolished, as were aristocratic privileges in all places except Poland. France's defeat in 1814 marked the end of the first French Empire. Oh, too bad. And yet again, it goes into other things of all their different territories and their early victories and yada, yada, shmada. What the hell? Okay, well, we could skip the Second French Empire. We just went over most of it. The French colonial. Oh, that's today. Because it's still going. The French colonial empire comprised of the overseas, protectorates and mandate territories that came under French rule from the 16th century onward. A distinction is generally made between the first colonial empire that existed until 1814, by which time most of it had been lost or sold, and the second French colonial empire, which began with the conquest of Algiers in 1830. At its apex, the second French colonial empire was one of the largest empires in history, including metropolitan France. The total amount of land under French sovereignty reached almost 4.5 million square miles in 1920, with a population of 110 million people. So France began to establish colonies in North America, in the Caribbean, and India in the 17th century, but lost most of its possessions following the defeat in the Seven-Year War. The North American possessions were lost to Britain and Spain, but later returned under Louisiana to France in 1800, a territory that had been sold to the United States in 1803. France rebuilt a new empire mostly after 1850, concentrating chiefly in Africa as well as Indochina.
and the South Pacific. And what I was trying to say was, where'd it go? It didn't have it. See, once you open up this little freaking thing. So, anywho, so France is the country, Paris is the capital, and started in 1534, and it says either surviving until present or ended in 1980. But it's still going because Francis the First of France was the first emperor or first ruler, and Emmanuel Macron is still present-day leader. So the French colonial empire now is still in existence. So far, it's the only one. The Frankish Empire was the country of France, and it had Paris, Orleans, Reims, Metz, and Aachen as the capital. And it was from 800 to 843, and for 43 years. Succeeded by the Middle Francia, East Francia, and West Francia. Clovis the First was the first ruler, and Louis the Pious was the last one. Pretty cool. Yeah, we're skipping Cambodia because I cannot pronounce the capital. Funan was the name given by the Chinese cartographers, geographers, and writers to the ancient Indian said state, or rather a loose network of states located in mainland Southeast Asia, centered on the Mekong Delta, that existed from the 1st to the 6th century CE. I cannot pronounce. So the name is found in Chinese historical texts describing the kingdom, and the most extensive descriptions are largely based on the report of two Chinese diplomats, Kong Tai and Zhu Ying, representing the Eastern Wu Dynasty, who sojourned in Funan in the 3rd century CE. Funan is known as the modern language of the region as Num, or Old Khmer. Nokor Funan, I'm not pronouncing all that. It talks about all the different languages. Sorry. I'm not doing it. Like the very name of the kingdom, the ethno-linguistic nature of the people is a subject of much discussion among specialists. The leading hypotheses are that the Funanese were mostly Mon-Khmer, or that they were mostly Austronesian, or that they constituted of a multi-ethnic society, which they do. The available evidence is that inconclusive to this issue. Michael Vickery has said that even though identification of the language of Funan is not possible, the evidence strongly suggests that the population was Khmer, or K-H-M-E-R. The result of I'm going to skip it. I can't even speak right now. I'm having a brain fart. Some of these words is like so easy. I can see it, but I can't pronounce it to save my life. But it talks about all the different languages. And, you know, there's a bunch of languages today that's no longer spoke, like Aramaic. It's no longer spoke. I think I'm done.
I'm sorry. That's Amharic. Never mind. Amharic. We translate Amharic.
Huh?
I was about to say, no, we use Amharic, and then I'm like, no, it's Amharic. We don't do Aramaic. It's Amharic.
It's Aramaic.
Translate a language.
Yeah, no, that's why I said I had to think for a second.
Oh.
There's a language.
Yeah, Aramaic. Aramaic was the original language spoke by Christ and all of them back in biblical times.
Yeah.
But see, here's where people get so stupid. And, okay, I'm going to ask you guys a question in all honesty, and just call me crazy. I don't care. I know, but if you're born somewhere, is that not where you're from?
Correct. I'm from New York. When people ask me,
you're American.
Where are you from? America, right. But even within the United States, typically when people ask you, where are you from, I say New York. Most people I know say, I'm in Pennsylvania, but I was born in New York. Do you see what I'm saying?
Because the reason why I'm asking is because I've had this discussion with people, and they're like, the Jews that are in Israel are not real Jews. I'm sorry.
What
the fuck is a real Jew to a fake Jew?
I know there are 12 tribes.
There's 12 tribes of Israel.
And there's the people, right. But if you're born... here's the thing. If you're born in Israel, you're Israeli.
Yeah.
Not all Israelis
True.
Are Jewish, though. Some are Catholic and some are Muslim.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is, if you're Jewish and you're born there, then you're a real Jew. I didn't know there was such thing as a fake one.
Well,
no, there are 13 tribes.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. But see, yeah, that's stupid. I never heard that before. That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Okay, everybody knows, well, if you're, there's 13 tribes of Israel, okay?
Right.
And they were all dispersed, right? And then in 1948, the Jews, after the three-day war or whatever it was, the same day, whatever it was, Israel got back Israel, and the Jews went back. Well, there's 10 tribes there now. There's still three missing, but I guess you have to read, because Mark Twain was there in Israel. It was a long documentary about it. But anyway, all the Jews are going back to Israel. And so someone said, this is what someone told me, there's no such thing as a real Jew. Okay. But I looked it up. It says, any physical descendant of Jacob or Israel is a Jew at this point in history. Some teach that real Jews are those who have been spiritually reborn. Such teaching misses the obvious that there are Jews by physical birth, and there are Jews who are spiritual. Oh, like Christians were Jews, reborn into the Jewish, you know what I'm saying? So that's what they're talking about. But yes, the Jewish people in Israel really are Jewish. So... they just want to say, it's just because it has to do with all the biblical stuff that's going on right now. And they're saying, no, the Jews, yes, they have. I just want to know someone else's input on that, because I just, call me crazy. Okay, anywho, Republic of Genoa? Republic, Genoa, is that Genoa? Like the Geneva Convention kind of thing? Anywho, was a medieval and early modern maritime republic from the 11th century to 1797 in Liguria of the northwestern Italian coast. During the late Middle Ages, it was a major commercial power in the Mediterranean and Black Sea between the 16th and 17th centuries. It was a major commercial power in the Mediterranean and Black Sea between the 6th and 7th centuries, and it was one of the major financial centers in Europe. Throughout history, The Genoese Republic established numerous colonies throughout the Mediterranean and the Black Sea, including Corsica from 1347 to 1768, Monaco and southern Crimea from 1266 to 1475, and the islands of Lesbos and Chios from the 14th century to 1462 and 1566, respectively. With the arrival of early modern period, the Republic had lost many of its colonies and had to shift its interests and focus on banking. The decision would prove successful for Genoa, which remained as one of the hubs of capitalism with highly developed banks and trading companies. So I guess we're not the only capitalist country. I didn't realize
that.
Well,
who said we were?
Huh?
Who said we were the only one?
I thought we were. I didn't realize that capitalism was a big thing in a lot of these other countries, which is still there. I mean, but
most countries are capitalistic. Some just have more social programs than others. But the Norwegian countries, Norway and all that, that everybody keeps spouting about how they're great social, democratic socialist countries, they tell you point blank, no, we're not. We're a market economy. They consider themselves capitalist. They don't consider themselves socialist. They have more social programs than we do. That's why they pay the higher taxes. But you can climb the ladder. You can better yourself. It's a little more difficult than it is here in America. But the majority of industrialized nations are capitalistic. They're just not as capitalistic as America is.
Yeah, I mean, because you do own things.
Right.
They do own their homes. You know, you do have people have companies and they have hotels and blah, blah, blah and all that crap.
And a poor person can become a rich person.
Which is why I don't understand. I can't grasp the concept of these morons in America who think capitalism is evil. No, it's greed is evil. Anybody can have money. It's just luck is the reason for most of the people. You know what I'm saying? And that's how most people get their money is by luck or greed. I mean, stop and look at it. Honest to God, who are the two groups of people in America? I kid you. Well, not just, there's more than two. I say these two particular groups have more money than most people. The
right.
Jews in America have money for the most part. Not all, for the most part. And gay people. I kid you not, go to South Beach. They got money. They have careers. It's just those groups, and don't get me wrong, there's celebrities and there's the bankers, the politicians, and all that. I'm not talking about them. But as a regular person, a lot of your gay communities have money.
Yeah.
They have their own home. They have whatever. I had two sisters-in-law.
Most of them,
huh?
I don't understand. Most gays that I know, homosexuals, male and female, that I personally grew up knowing conservative thinking. I mean, even though they were liberals or whatever.
No, I know what you're saying.
The ones that I know would not be on this progressive bullshit side because they're business people. You know what I mean? They're family oriented. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I was talking with my little sister, tonight at dinner. Well, she's 50, so I guess that's not really little. But
But we were talking about our mom, who was a bleeding heart liberal hippie. I mean, big time. She
not all hippies are. Yeah, not all hippies
She was a capitalist. She's but I mean, she had a hippie store. You know, the marijuana. I mean, she was, you know, she was for communes, but a commune is not a communist. You understand? There's a difference. So she was for people working together. She was not for government at all. She was for would be libertarian. I guess you would call it. But today, what these progressives and liberals are going on about. Oh, no. She would be completely against what they are doing. Today's liberals don't look anything like the ones from 50 and 60 years ago. Not at all. You know, and at least not the ones I knew. And, they didn't sit around doing nothing and expecting things to be handed to them. They didn't want government involvement. They wanted to, you know, grow their own food and do this, that, and the other thing. You know, that free love bullshit. You know, it wasn't about controlling other people. This authoritarianism, that's what concerns me, is the authoritarianism. You know, all the books the Handmaid's Tale, ZPG, Zero Population Growth, all this stuff, all of these were caused by authoritarianism, but the stories made it that it was the conservatives doing it. But the way I'm seeing it today, it's not the conservatives. So the problem is not whether you're conservative or liberal. The problem is the authoritarianism. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Authoritarianism, yeah.
Yeah, the fascist. So I think that's what's thrown people off, is that we thanks to movies and books and media, we've always associated authoritarianism and fascism with conservatism, with the right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But here, right now, it's the left that's doing it, and I think that's what's throwing people off.
Oh yeah. So I'm gonna cut the rest of this off because my brain hurts. If I get in that mood, I just can't do this whole. I'm gonna figure something out for next week. I'm probably gonna just pick one empire and then just completely go over it and do it like that instead of going down, because my brain hurts after doing it like this. I don't know, I just thought about it and just realized it just feels like I'm not getting any, you know what I'm saying, not enough information. But anywho, you know Biden's boneheaded idea to pack the court, he did a commission?
Yeah,
it backfired.
Yep, let's see what he does. If he still does it, then we'll have our answer.
Well, here's the thing. Here's this. Cable news regular and nation writer Ellie Mistel declared on Twitter, when you put no court reformers on your court reform commission and you end up with no court reform, this game was fixed from the moment at Joe Biden named the commission. He denounced the whole effort. Yeah, so
he's saying the members of
the commission resigned mysteriously.
Right, because he's not listening to them. He's going to do what he wants. So why should they keep on it? Well, so why should they stay on it?
Well, the thing is, Biden can't technically expand the Supreme Court on his own. He just wants the commission to. No, but yeah, it didn't work.
Nope.
So
should be interesting to see how he does to get out of it. Oh, I know. The Dems want it so they can get Democratic judges. But what's the difference? They're all fucking bought anyway. I mean, they're all bought, so. And they're saying the Democrats are facing a grim political reality in the midterms. Why? I think it doesn't matter.
Well, here's the thing. The elections, the 22 elections are coming up, and they keep telling us we have to start grassroots. You know, the go to your school boards and your local elections. The only thing is that's a slow going process. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm not saying don't vote. I plan on voting. I'm not going to throw my vote away.
I'm not voting. I know my vote didn't count.
Here's the thing. If we don't vote, okay, if we all go and vote, all right, and I don't mean mail-in ballots. I mean going to the polls. If all Republicans, whether they vote for Trump or not, doesn't matter. If we all go and vote in person, okay, and we lose again, then, I mean, we have more, we can stand and say, look, we all voted, and look what happened. But if no Republicans go to vote, all the Democrats, all they have to do is say, oh, well, you guys didn't vote. You see what I'm saying?
No, I know. They need to do away with mail-in ballots.
But this is what I'm trying to say. If Republicans and independents and those of us that believe that 2020 was stolen, fraudulent, and not the best thing going, actually go and vote in person and we lose again, we have even more evidence. Even if we can't get the government to do anything, maybe we can convince some more of people, voters, that there's something wrong. I don't give a shit about convincing politicians. They're done. We're never going to convince them. They're all corrupt.
Hey, listen. Hold on. I got something important that people need to listen to. So there have been foods that have been recalled because of, I'm going to go farther into it, from Kroger, Dollar General, and other food chains. Because of it doesn't say. Hold on. There's certain canned foods that you need to get rid of, and it has the lot number and everything on it. But I'm trying to see why. So more than 525,000 pounds of canned beef products have been recalled. The USDA Food Safety Inspection on October 8th, said that the manufacturer, it's Crider Foods of Stillmore, Georgia, it's C-R-I-D-E-R Foods of Stillmore, Georgia, is recalling 525,000 pounds of canned beef with gravy.
Holy shit. I don't eat that crap, so.
Well, no, listen. If you don't eat canned beef, then don't worry about it. But it's Dollar General's Clover Valley and Kroger and Hostess and Armour.
Wow.
Okay. So all the products have October 22nd, 2020, or March 15th of 2021 production date, and therefore have Best Buy dates 2 years after. But it's a whole list of the different brands, the 12-ounce, these are all the 12-ounce cans that have been recalled. Hargis House Roast Beef and Gravy, Clover Valley Fully Cooked Roast Beef with Gravy, Kroger Roast Beef with Gravy, Hostess Laura Lynn and Armour and Harvest Creek. And all of the,
and all of those products have the establishment number EST31812 on the can. And it looks like it's not the chip beef. It just says roast beef, and then you see why. Oh, the reason why is one of the spices they used had unsafe levels of lead in it.
What spice has lead in it?
Huh?
What spice has lead in it?
I have no idea. That's why I'm going over this. So lead poisoning occurs when lead builds up in the body, often over months or years. Even small amounts of lead can cause serious health problems. See
right.
why we say this in America. So anyway, I will save this and I will post it. So you can either... Oh, okay, and it has the guy's name, Mark Howell, the president of Kreider Incorporated. It's got his phone number, and you could call them, or you could take it back to the store that you bought it. See, this is hardly the first recall to affect Kroger shoppers. In the past 2 weeks, Simple Mills crackers and DiGiorno pizza have been recalled.
Wow. Like really weird.
So certain lots, okay, listen, there are certain lots of kale and two pre-made salad bowls because they're contaminated with listeria.
Holy shit, what the fuck?
Yeah. So, go to...
Gotta wonder.
And this does not have the two salads. Oh, yes, it does. Hold on. I'm glad I just found this looking up. I was going through the thing. The Kroger Chef Salad Kit, the 6 ounce bag, and the Kroger Garden Salad with Chicken and Bacon Bowl.
Yeah.
The UPC is 11102219 and 11102122. Those are UPC codes. They have been recalled because of listeria. So, I like to get those food recalls out, but I'm going to save this and I'll post this later and I'll try and get it to you. But, and then the kale. So yeah, if you buy roast beef and it's got the expiration date, and I'll post it. I just happened to catch this where it said it was on my news thing that said, over 10,000 pounds of these meat have been thrown out, recalled, puts more than that. And so the Kroger kale bag has also been, they found listeria in it. And that UPC is 11110-18170. And its best used by is, it was last month. But I guess that's all of their, that's an old, why do they have today's date on it? Freaking morons. They got today's date on last month's product. Wow. But anywho, yeah, it's under Best Life, and it has the recalls on the meat. So there you go. Yeah, the ad was from 10 hours ago. So.
Holy shit.
Yeah. But tomorrow, I'm going to finish up the rest of that survival medicine book, and then I'm probably going to start that new cool book I got, Home home doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah. And I'll figure something out different to do for how to do the history show, because my brain hurts.
What brain?
I'm sorry, my brain. Huh?
I said you can always make Bobby read. Make
no,
him answer
it's
questions.
Not, I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's just a reading or, like I said, some of the stuff you can't pronounce it. So if I read it, if I go through and read it and reread it and reread it, I might be able to pronounce it more instead of just doing little blurbs of each one. I'm sound like a babbling freaking idiot. I might just do that. I might just go in depth more instead of just picking one random, not one, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, you know, Google will help you with pronunciation because they do have a, it has a verbal thing that for pronunciation.
Most of the time, there's a little thing right next to each word, how to phonetically sound it out. No.
Uh-huh.
Not one bit of the shit has, nope, and that's why I'll sit there and stare at it. Yep, that's how I think that's how you pronounce it. No, it didn't have that on there. So, go ahead, Bobby. You got 3 minutes.
All right.
Left.
All right.
Sorry for the rambling.
No, it was a great show, as usual.
I'm glad I managed to get off of some of it.
Oh, thank you. You know, I know I sound like a rambling idiot when I'm going, yeah, sure.
Well, everybody have a wonderful rest of your night. God bless America. God bless our children, our veterans, our first responders, our military, and God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.